The AutJet Business Show is your gateway to expert business advice and real-world success stories. Each week, a different leader in the business world will share their tips, insights, and lessons, offering you practical advice to navigate your entrepreneurial journey. Whether you have a business idea or are just starting out or looking to elevate your existing business, the AutJet Business Show provides mentoring, inspiration, and invaluable networking opportunities to help turn your vision into reality. Ensure you get these transformative conversations live on Thursdays at 6 p.m. or find the podcast at highfm.com. Let's build your business empire together.
Welcome, welcome. It's that time of the week again. It's Thursday. I'm David Zeidel, and this is the AutJet Business Show. And tonight we've got someone with us whose voice at High FM you most probably know. It's Nick Ingle, and he runs the Dis-Chem Medical Monday show. Good evening, Nick.
It's Monday. Oh, wait, sorry, old habits. Good evening, Dave. Great to be chatting with you.
All right, and I think you've just got a sense of how this interview is going to go. So I'm going to quickly introduce Nick to you. Then I'm going to give you, as I always do, the little business lesson, and then we'll get the lessons from Nick. So who is Nick? Nick Ingle is, and I wrote in my the headline for Nick, the ex-alcoholic, and he says, no, 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 once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic, even if you don't have a drink, and we'll get into that a little bit later. So Nick is an alcoholic and the founder and CEO of Emmett Gyms. And his story is as powerful as the work that he does. Nick Ingle is the founder, as I said, of this amazing gym that started off as a physical gym and has actually moved more online. And he looks at strategic human performance, and he looks at how people perform and tries to change everything, not just their bodies. But what makes him stand out is his professional expertise. And it's from the depth of experience. And it's every time he works or goes into the room, and the room would be the online room for training, he's there to change the person's life. And as he's changed his own life. As I said, he's a former alcoholic. He's been sober since 2006. That's over 20 years. Nick has transformed his life into a mission of helping others build resilience, discipline, and accountability. He's also a champion powerlifter, having won gold at the Africa Championships, and he uses physical training as a gateway to something far deeper, and that's mental toughness, emotional resilience, and sustainable high performance. Over nearly two decades, Nick has evolved his gym, Emmett, from a single gym into a multi-dimensional platform that works with executives, athletes, and institutions, guiding them through pressure, uncertainty, and the real risks of underperformance. His work actually sits at that intersection of leadership, resilience, and organizational health. And he's known for his no-hype, precision-driven approach that delivers real outcomes. So beyond the boardroom and the gym, Nick is also a powerful advocate for addiction recovery and trauma awareness, particularly amongst men, using his own personal story to open conversations that so many shy away from. So this is going to be a conversation about performance, but also about truth, about recovery, leadership under pressure, and what it really takes to build strength from the inside out. But before we get to that conversation, I want to give you today's business lesson. And as I said to you, we're now going through the 18 chapters of my book, Life on the Run, 18 Steps to Success. And these lessons were taken from running the marathon, running the Comrades Marathon, in fact, and the lessons that we learn from running, or that I learned from running, that could be used for business and life in general. And today's lesson is friends and family are important. And what we mean by that is, and it comes through from a lot of these talks that I've had, is around networking. Is if you achieve something just for yourself, it's amazing. But if you achieve it and others, you take others along with you for that ride and you build it for others and with others and they enjoy it with you. So your success is not just for you. Everybody enjoys that success. It is much greater than that. And there's a great quote that Muhammad Ali said, and that was, service to others is the rent you pay for the room here on earth. And what we mean by that is, whatever you're doing, do it for service for others. But if you're doing something for yourself, just see how you can bring others into it. And that's the short little lesson for today. So I want to get to Nick's conversation, but I actually want to break Nick's life into three parts. I want to go through the past, the present, and the future. And the past, Nick, is around 20 years ago, or it ended 20 years ago. How did you get to a state of getting into that and being in that state? How did you get out to the present? And I know you've got some, although you're doing, I think, pretty well now in the present, it's still not good enough for you. You're looking at some amazing stuff into the future. So take us back to the past, Nick, and just tell us, where were you and how did you get there? And then more importantly, how did you get out of that?
Firstly, just thank you, David, for having me on the show. It really does mean a great deal to me. I'm a big fan of the show and the work that you do and the work that Ortjet does, because they're really part of supporting our community, from my understanding, from the very beginning. And you alluded to service. It was set up, from my understanding, that rather protect and prepare a business for challenging times than support the family through the charity organizations should the business fail. And the work that you do is absolutely invaluable in building and maintaining our community and training around the world, an absolute legend. So from my side, how I started with drinking, I started drinking at family friends' Pesach evening. I was 9 years old. It was the Turin family in Cape Town.
No.
Blaming myself, because four cups of wine at the age of nine, I started to steal the other kids' wine and drink their wine, hide it in my pea soup. And I realized very early on, like, that was what I wanted to do with my life. Even going out as a young teenager, early 20s, my friends were going out to meet girls, to meet ladies, to build their lives. I was going to the bar to drink. Drinking was the foundation of everything that I did.
So, Nick, can I ask you just...
Sure.
The drinking, do you think it was something, a disposition that you had beforehand? Was it just natural that if you had something to drink, it would affect you? What did you get from the drinking that made you want to drink more and want to put it in your pea soup?
So, great question. I didn't know how to deal with the trauma that I had been through as a child. I had a relatively or very traumatic childhood. Certain aspects of it, certain aspects were wonderful, but there were things that happened to me as a very young child that I was not able to process and understand. And it also, I believe it affected my cognitive development and my ability to be in the world. So the moment I had alcohol, there was that numbness and that oblivion and also confidence that came from that. And that's why I pursued drinking. But my understanding from working in this field that alcoholics lack a certain protein that's an off switch, where usually around about 2 units of alcohol, you have that and your body says enough. We don't have that. And then also psychologically, I wanted to continue drinking. If I could have continued drinking and maintained that buzz, that burr level, that oblivion, without getting drunk, in hindsight, I suppose I would have. But you keep drinking and you don't stop until everything collapses and falls down. So it was really for me to avoid any sense of feeling or connection to the pain.
Okay, so it was a coping mechanism for you initially. Yep. And then when did you realize, like, hang on, something needs to change?
So very early on, I tried several times to stop drinking, three times actually. Once was I was dating an amazing girl, half Iranian, half Moroccan, and absolutely beautiful inside and out. And the drinking started to cause problems. She said, if you stop drinking, I'll stop smoking. So I did. The moment that relationship ended, because when you stop drinking, it doesn't mean you're addressing the problems and the your inability to connect to the world and to function as an adult. That ended the relationship. I went straight back to drinking. I tried several times. Nothing worked. I worked for a company called Hereford, and they're a financial services group. I got called in by my MD and my CEO one day, and Mike, the CEO, said to me, Nick, or actually I think it was Glenn or Kia, said, Nick, do you have a drinking problem? And I knew right then that my life was going to go one of two ways. In essence, it wasn't a question, David. It was a choice. Do you tell us you have a drinking problem? Because everybody knows I stank like the back of a bottle store bar fridge. And if I would have said no, I most likely would have been fired. And to be perfectly frank, I would have been dead within 6 months. I would have shot myself, killed myself in a car accident, or drunk myself to death. Because there were times during that darkness when the drinking stopped working that I sat on my couch with my gun in my mouth, asking Hashem to give me the courage to kill myself. Now, that is a very dark place to be, and I'm able to talk about it in this way because of service that you mentioned in your story, and sharing the story enables me to share it more easily each time. So that was, I didn't want to die, and I didn't know how to live. So I made a choice, and I said, absolutely. I said, yes, because I knew if I said no, my life was over. They said, do you want help? And I said, yes. And that resulted in me going the next day, Friday, to see Dan Wolf when he had First Step, and chatted with Dan. And it was the most wonderful news I ever received in my life. At the end of the hour, he said to me, Nick, you're an alcoholic. You start the program on Monday. And for me, that was, yes, what a relief. At least I know I'm an alcoholic and there's a chance here. I had no idea what I was before that.
Fantastic. And I mean, it's, I can hear the still 20 or more years. What year was that?
Yeah, 20 years ago.
20 years ago.
2006.
2006. So, I can hear the sense of that relief. So I want to get back to how you built from there, but we'll do it after the break.
The AutJet Business Show provides mentoring, inspiration, and invaluable networking opportunities to help turn your vision into reality. Let's build your business empire together.
Welcome. You tuned in to 101.9 High FM. I'm David Zeidel, and you're listening to the AutJet Business Show, and we're talking to Nick Engel, who's just started to share with us that in the early days, he tried to cope with his issues using alcohol and didn't kind of was relieved when eventually he was called in by his boss to say, you're an alcoholic, that there was a title and a name to it. And he could now say, well, I'm an alcoholic. And more than that, they said there's something you can do about it. And you went to see somebody who's now going to take you through the steps of getting out of that. Do you want to talk us through that?
Absolutely. It was an incredible experience, because I really have to say a very big thank you to Michael Dundalakis and Glenn Nokia from the Hereford Group, because they not only afforded me the opportunity to stay in the business by asking me if I had a problem and needed help, they organized the person for me to go and see Dan and chat with him. And then they literally, Dave, this is 10 years of working for this. Well, at that time, it was about 6 years of working for the company. And, you know, going from one of their top producers at the top franchise of Liberty to the very bottom when everything had collapsed. And they stuck with me. They had every right to fire me and get rid of me. But they stuck with me. They gave me the opportunity to go to the meeting so I could leave early. If I needed to sleep late, because part of the detox and that recovery was absolute exhaustion. And it was just going into treatment. I did an outpatient program every single day. And my first day there was quite interesting because, I mean, as insane as it sounds now, in hindsight, at the moment, I was like, okay, these guys will teach me how to drink successfully. And the shock of finding out that I had to stop drinking, that I'd done with my drinking, even though I knew that in my head, I think in my heart, I hadn't accepted that yet. And I accepted that, and that was, you know, 20-odd years ago, and been sober since, which was great. But it was 12 weeks of every day going to the program, Monday to Friday, and on weekends working through step work and working that program. And I stuck with that. The advice given was for 2 years maybe of the program, aftercare and relapse prevention. And in essence, I did it for 4 years and then moved to Cape Town.
And how did you stick with it? Because if you're used to drinking or you're used to doing anything, how do you change that habit? Because it becomes a habit.
It's not only a habit, it was my entire life. All of my friends had moved on. They'd gotten married, they'd started families. I was no longer welcome in their home and invited to meals or to go out, and for very good reasons, because my behavior was not conducive to have around as a young married couple, perhaps with kids at the time. So I my only place to go was the Keg and Peagle in Linksfield, where I used to drink. And then I'd, you know, go and have a cup of coffee. I realized very quickly that wouldn't work. So what happened was, at home, I had all this time on my hands. I started with one push-up. I watched a documentary on Charles Atlas. I'd been involved in martial arts and training in my earlier life, and I needed something to fill the time. I started with one push-up, and that really helped me. And then it gave me something to work towards, and it gave me something that I could track in a linear way, which was essential. The challenge in early recovery is you have no idea how long you're going to have to deal with this for until you can accept the gist for today. And all I have to do is be sober and act like a mensch from the time I wake up in the morning to the time I put my head on the pillow, because that's all I can control. So that really is how I sort of dealt with it, breaking it down to one day at a time. And sometimes, to be perfectly honest, 1 minute at a time, because it got very, very challenging. And the craving gets bad, not so much for the beer, but for people, places, things, and connection. And my loneliness in having to isolate myself, because I had no friends at the time that I could go and spend time with, until almost I had proven my worth as a sober person, and rightly so. But that loneliness eventually shifted into the value of solitude and understanding the value of being on my own. And I started to repair relationships over a few years, and then started to reconnect with my friends. And I must say, they were absolutely wonderful, because there was a time I went to Cape Town to open up a branch of Hereford. It wasn't for me. I couldn't deal with it. I got wiped out financially, lost everything that wasn't of value, and effectively ended up homeless, you know, sleeping in my car for a few nights because I didn't want to stress my dad. And coming back to Johannesburg, and a very dear friend of mine, Ian Levitt, who's also very fortunately my attorney, because he's a pit bull, gave me an apartment, David, to stay in rent-free for 2.5 years so I could get back on my feet. Robbie Cohen, another friend of mine, gave me a job at his telecom startup, Dabba, if you remember that, putting telephone systems and networks into the inner city of Johannesburg. That was the most wonderful experience. And then I started training with Dion Fransman, old martial arts instructor of mine, and that reignited my passion for the gym. So when I left insurance after leaving Dabba after that year contract, that's where the idea of the gym came from. And I realized its value because it helped me fill those very dark hours, reading on Twitter back in the day and connecting with trainers and coaches and that developed my passion, and that's really where the gym and where Emmett started.
So that was the past, and I just want to pick up on one thing before we go to the present, and that was when you said you did one push-up, and often I've heard to get rid of a bad habit, it's not to say don't do the habit, it's to find something else to do in the time when you would have done that habit. So it's just substituting something for something else, and hopefully what you're substituting is something good. And you started doing the gym, and then that gave you the idea to do that. And then how did you progress from that to what we now are calling the present in terms of this interview, of actually creating a gym and earning money from doing the gym? Just take us through the process of how that developed.
I love that question because it's almost comical in a way, but the lesson is quite profound. I ended up, when I was working for Dabba, training with Dion. Those who have trained with him know he's very intense. I ended up training for 4 to 5 hours a day. And after about 14 months, I started to realize, hang on a moment, this could be becoming a problem and it could be cross-addicting. So how do I stay involved and not overtrain? I'm going to start a gym. That really was a dream as well since I was a kid. I thought, let me start a gym and then I'll be working so much I won't have time to train. You know, that's the light-hearted side of it. But it was a way that I was able to stay in my passion but not let it dictate all of my time. And with that, I approached a friend of mine, Dave Needham, who very kindly offered to give me some space at his home. He had a dojo. And I started with, actually before that, two clients in the park across the road. So maybe here's a lesson for business. Wanting to start the gym, doing research and studying, I realized that I wasn't at the level of the trainer that I wanted to be. So while I was still working for Dabba on weekends and in evenings, I trained the ladies in the building where I was living in Glenrand, in the flat that Ian gave me. And I trained friends of mine for free. And after a year, I got two paying clients, Dean Unterslach and Shlomi Wiegler. And they paid me 75 Rand each. And we trained in the park at Dan Pinar Park. And that's really how the gym started.
So the alcohol obviously didn't affect your memory. I mean, you're remembering all these names of all these people. Yeah. But I want to reiterate that message that you've given, because it's a great business lesson. It's around giving something for free, which,
yes,
number one, gives you the ability to learn. Number two, it gives somebody to see the value that you can get. And then that often turns into paid clients. So then you had the two clients, and then how did it progress from there?
So and that's how I've built all of the businesses within Emmett, is you understand that, you know, we have to learn, you have to develop your brand, your reputation, and your expertise. From there, it was interesting because in the evenings at my friend Dave's gym, at his house, there were other guys training, other young trainers, and they weren't willing to share the space in the evening. Excuse me. So that meant I could only train clients in the morning, but that's 50% of a coach's time, of a trainer's time. So I had to find an alternative. And I spoke to Dave about it. He was working for a corporate at the time. And I went to go and have a chat. And he said, you know what? Go and speak to this person. See if we can do training in the evenings at their offices in Sandton. They're one of the biggest banks in Europe, in the world at the time. And we went, had a chat to them, said, can we bring on-site training to you after hours? They loved the idea. And that was Deutsche Bank. And then that evolved into working from one of the guys at Deutsche said, hey, I've got a mate at Stanlib, go and speak to him. And they went to go speak to Stanlib, and that got us Stanlib, which got us Liberty. And what's interesting is I spent all of this time in financial services, and I seem to be back in the industry, which was incredibly valuable because I could speak the language on a certain level to the people that I was training. And then one referred to another. We've never really advertised. I've relied on word of mouth for growing both the clients in the gym and the corporate on-site training, because I found that's been the best guard of the barrier to entry, and also the best way to qualify clients. If it's a referral, they're already pre-qualified, and all of my referred clients have stayed with us, which is something that's absolutely wonderful.
So I just want to get back to your, let's call it your business model. So often you have a, and we got people in the gym who become these personal trainers, and they train one person at a time, sometimes two. The maximum I've seen is about three people at a time. You, out of necessity, you decided to train a whole group of people, and your, the person paying you wasn't the person using the service. The person who was paying you was the company, number one.
Absolutely.
Number two, you did it on their premises using their equipment, if I understand you correctly, which is a whole different kind of business model. So I want to ask you two questions. One, was that intentional, or did that just organically grow like that? And the second question, you keep referring to the things that we do. What are the other things that you at present are doing as part of what used to be Emmett Gym, but I know it's now called Emmett Media?
Yes. So the model came about organically, but realizing that, hold on a second. So what, with certain of the clients, we would train at their premises. Peregrine had a gym at their building, and we would train companies in the building at their gym. So other clients like Deutsche, we would take equipment through, and that's where the kettlebells come from. And that realization is as follows. Very simple. One, I didn't have a gym to train clients in the evenings because the guys who were there before me wouldn't share the space. So that forced me to find an alternative. That alternative taught me it's so valuable. I don't have to pay rent for gym space at my clients. They pay the rent. Sometimes I bring equipment, but that equipment I can use at all of my clients because it went back into the double cab and then onto the next client. So there would be clients at the gym in Houghton, then onto Stanlib, for example, in Melrose Arch, onto Deutsche Bank in Sandton, and then back to Houghton for evening clients after the other guys had finished. So it was the necessity taught me where to look for opportunities. And that was incredible. That's what was called Emmett Gyms, because that evolved into different gyms, not just our one physical gym. And then for the second part of the question, what happened was when the pandemic hit, we had to shut down. So now at the time I'd started the Emmett Academy, where we trained and developed young coaches from disadvantaged communities. We had done, again, free work at high schools, training their rugby team. These young guys would asked if they could come to the gym to train. And because I realized rugby scholarships for them were their only way of getting to better schools. I mean, Queen's High was an amazing school, but to get to schools with bursaries and scholarships, and also to further their education. They became our coaches. At the time the pandemic hit, I had five coaches that I was responsible for. And now we couldn't train. We had to shut down. Also, just as a note, giving free training is invaluable if you do it in a responsible way and protect yourself. For many years, I had trained the doctors that were staying in Sydenham that were visiting South Africa for their trauma training. They were from Europe and they were from the US and Australia primarily. And I said, if you're in South Africa for 3 months or less, you can train at us for no cost. Because I understood that it gave me the opportunity to develop a relationship internationally and expand the brand's reputation and name internationally. That free work got me workshops in Europe, training bios and physios using powerlifting as a rehab modality. Then what also got me was my coaches, and then pandemic hits, we had to go online. I got them cell phones and mobile data plans. We went online. When people went back to the gym, I had all of this equipment and no way to generate an income from it. So we started live streaming powerlifting competitions on Emmett Media. That's when we set up Emmett Media.
Sorry, so I just want to take you back because there's quite a few things that happened there.
It's a lot.
So are you saying that the pandemic hit and you couldn't go to the gym. So did you start training people online in their own homes?
Yes.
Am I understanding that correctly?
Absolutely, yes. So,
so you changed again. You had a huge problem and you solved it in a very interesting way, which people hadn't done before. So people couldn't go to gym. You couldn't train, mm-hmm. but you did train people and you had contacts around the world. So you started training worldwide from your little apartment in South Africa. Is that right?
What, that is spot on. I didn't realize what the value of providing free training to international doctors would be. I just knew that it's something to do because then I develop a network. You know, talking about referrals, I was generating my own referrals by doing this. Then when the pandemic hit, I phoned them up and I said, I know you're under pressure. I know you're stuck at home. Can we train you? And that's when they took the opportunity to say, absolutely, we'd love to support you. Now we can pay you back. And that's how we started the online business. And within 3 months, we grew to coaching clients in 15 countries.
That's an incredible story. Yes, you were about to say something.
Yeah, sorry. No, so the real value of online, again, is what I learned working with corporates. I don't have to pay rent. The client trains in their location. They're paying in a currency that's fantastic for them and wonderful for us because we can come in cheaper than the competition and still charge more effectively than we could in South Africa. Plus, we're not affected by time zones. Dave, the biggest thing with a gym is time. Clients train in the morning and in the afternoon and evening. Leveraging time zones gave us the opportunity to always be doing morning or evening sessions, irrespective of the time in South Africa.
And could you also leverage the amount of people that were attending so that you could train five people in their own homes simultaneously? Did that work?
Absolutely. And we basically structured as what we call our Emmet performance pods, where it's, again, referral. So it's by invitation that you could train. And with Zoom, with the bigger monitors, we could effectively manage and train 10 people, 12 people at a time, because my corporate work had got me to be able to train 30 people effectively at a time, because those classes would be quite big. And we developed that skill set. So the other thing, if I can share a story with you very quickly, wonderful thing with the Jewish family in South Africa. The grandparents were here. A brother was here with his family. We had two sisters in Australia with their kids and a brother in Israel with his kids, all training together in the same time. So during the pandemic, the kids were hanging out twice a week for an hour training with their grandparents and their cousins.
What an amazing, amazing story. So I want to take a little bit more of from that gym, then expand it into what you're currently doing, which you're calling the media side. What is that media side? And then focus on where you're looking to go in the future. But again, we'll do that after the break.
The AutJet Business Show provides mentoring, inspiration, and invaluable networking opportunities to help turn your vision into reality. Let's build your business empire together.
Welcome back. I'm David Zeidel. You're listening to the AutJet Business Show on 101.9 High FM. And we're busy talking to Nick Ingle, who's talking about how he went from making a living, then becoming an alcoholic, then getting out of that, and through that, starting his own business. And Nick, while you're busy talking, and I love the story that you ended off with where you're saying you through the gym and you got families to like participate in something together from three different countries, which was quite amazing. It makes me think of a Japanese concept that you might or might not know called Ikigai. And what Ikigai talks about is it's at the intersection of four things. If you can find that intersection for yourself, that's where you'll succeed in what you're doing. And what are those four things? It's doing something that you love, something that you're good at, something that the world needs, and then together with that, something you can make money from. And as I'm listening to your story, it sounds like you're fulfilling all of those things. And you know, if you think of circles and each one's a circle and they overlap a bit, it's where all four overlap in the middle. That's the sweet spot. And it sounds to me like you've hit that sweet spot in your own life from doing those things. Is that a correct assumption?
Spot on. And that's exactly how I did it, because we started in the gym. I looked at where there were opportunities and also where are there shortfalls? How can things be done better? So going to the corporate clients, for example, as a way to start. Then that also evolved from working with alcoholics and addicts into my own speaking career and my own executive coaching career, working with high performance individuals or trying to keep them high performance. And then seeing the opportunities to evolve the gym into other things. And I think, you know, we operate really at the intersection of performance, media, and mindset. And the view of the media side came from wanting to support athletes, not only in how they train, but in how their moments are experienced and remembered. And I think if I can break that down a little bit further, at its core, it's really simple. We help people perform better, and we help them see that performance clearly, whether it's in work and how they are getting feedback from work or on the broadcasting of sporting events that we do, the photography that we do. You know, the gym, so Emmett Gyms, we work with individuals and organizations on physical and mental performance. Through Emmett Media, we document and broadcast those moments at a very professional level. My poor guys get really drilled by me on this. And they've really come up in their performance. And Emmett Beats, which we haven't chatted about yet, is we create the sound and the atmosphere that brings the energy to those environments. As an example, you can't play commercial music on YouTube because they'll mute your broadcast and they'll eventually get a strike against your channel. So we started Emmett Beats, our own record label, where we've been producing albums now and we produce our own music. That evolved from background music to specific event music. And how amazing is this, David? We had someone listening to our live music at an event, and they approached us the next week to say, listen, we'd love you to create music for our dealerships, and we have 28 of them. So, you know, just these type of things come out in doing that. But I have to say, the media side evolved from cell phones to webcams to cameras, DSLRs, and then actually back now to webcams and cell phones, because their technology is so good that we can use those. And it's about building simple kits. We've gotten to work all over the world, well, all over Africa, and we've live streamed events from the Commonwealth Champs, World Masters Powerlifting Championships, multiple international and regional events as well. And that's the next level of where the business is going.
So before we go to where it's going, I just want to ask you, first of all, you said a DSLR. What's a DSLR?
Digital single lens reflex camera. So normal, like a Canon camera or a Sony camera, which has a changeable lens, basically.
So I know that what you did is you started training people, but then you started going to events and you say live streaming it. Now, I know you explained to me what live streaming is, and also you give people recording of themselves doing the event, and you became almost like a TV station broadcasting this on YouTube live. Just take us through a little bit of that. How did that evolve?
So that happened. We had all of these cameras and we had the gear and we had webcams, because I would be doing, we'd be demonstrating the movements live to our clients. And if a client didn't get it, we'd have to then demonstrate it live if we couldn't use our language to explain the moves they had to do on the online sessions. So we went to the South African Powerlifting Federation and they said, hey, can we live stream this? We've got software, we've got expertise, and we did. And that we broadcast to our own YouTube channel. That was part of the agreement. Initially, we did it to the South African Federation's channel. And then we started to use our own channel. And that channel built up exactly as you said. You know, we've had events that have had 200,000 views on the channel. And it's been unbelievable, that level of growth. So what we do is effectively we broadcast specific sporting events to the world via YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram. And with that then became a spin-off of the podcast interviews. We started the Coffee and Conversations with Champions podcast series, where we chat to coaches, we chat to athletes. We're now chatting to businesses about how they work within strength sports and support strength sports. And that's a great way to build relationships with businesses with a future view to sponsorship, either of the live stream or advertising on the live stream and the podcast. I think live streaming, it's easier to refer to it as a broadcast, because I think people will understand that it's a simpler term.
So I find it incredible how the business has developed, and it's based on having the equipment and thinking, what else can I do with that, and building it up. I want to discuss with you where you're going in the future, but we'll do that after the break.
The AutJet Business Show provides mentoring, inspiration, and invaluable networking opportunities to help turn your vision into reality. Let's build your business empire together.
You're listening to the AutJet Business Show on 101.9 High FM. I'm David Zeidel, and we're busy talking to Nicholas Ingle. And kind of the message that's coming through is, go with the punches, and not only roll with the punches, but more look at all the opportunities that exist as you're doing what you're doing. Is there more? And you seem to just flow from the one to the other. So as we went to the break, I said to you, we want to look at where you're going in the future. So let's just go back. You started off as an alcoholic with what looked like a limited future. In fact, you were thinking of ending that future at one stage. You then went to the program and you substituted the drinking with some exercise. You then started doing the gymming. You then started training some people, had limited space. You found a way of using corporates that you could use their space and actually get the corporates to pay rather than the individuals and do group exercises. You then started, COVID hit, you then got into wanting to continue doing this with using media. Then post-COVID, you thought, hang on a second, I can use this media for other things. I can then use it to live stream other events. So now you became, rather than just streaming the person doing the gym, you're streaming other people and you create these events. And I know that you also create pictures for them afterwards so that they can see their whole performance and how they did. And now you're doing this, and now it's evolved into the beats, which is the music that you created. But you say there's even more that you're looking forward to in the future. What are you looking at in the future?
I think if you look at a company, for example, like IMG, International Management Group, started by Mark McCormack. I mean, his book, What They Don't Teach You at the Harvard School of Business, had a profound effect on me. And what I wanted to look at doing now, we're evolving Emmett Agencies into an agency business where we're helping with the organization of events. So we can go, we have sound equipment, we have lighting, we can put on the event. We can manage and introduce relationships between companies to sponsor athletes, to sponsor events, and manage that relationship going forward as well. And then with the live streaming or the broadcast, we're expanding into other strength sports. Next year, we've got our first golf event that we're going to be doing. It's the largest event of its kind in the world, which kind of blows my mind. We've got multiple international events taking place in South Africa, from strongman to powerlifting, strict arm, that we're broadcasting. And it's just, that's really sort of where we're going. But if I could answer the question, where are we going completely? I have no idea yet. I'm watching very carefully for those opportunities.
Wow. And I think that message has come through, that you're always looking out for those opportunities. I just want to take you back a little bit, because you can't just make a statement and say we're doing one of the greatest or the biggest golfing events and leave it at that. Just what the hell are you doing there?
So I can't mention too much about it yet, but very simply, South Africa hosts the it's like the largest golf day in the world. So there's individuals from around the country, from around the world, that are coming to support this golf day, and we're going to be photographing it and live streaming it. And just to give you an idea, and if I could share a message for South Africans, don't underestimate the value of a cell phone, a cheap Chinese gimbal, and a Wi-Fi router, because that gives you mobile stable cameras. And that's what we used at strongman competitions, replicating rigs that are, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars, and using webcams because they're stable, they're simple. I've looked at what's the most reliable, stable, simple way to do this, because if there's a problem, it's got to be fixed very quickly. So, yeah, so that's the golf day that we're doing. We're looking at World's Strongest Man in Upington towards the end of the year. We've got the WPC Africa Champs, which is a powerlifting competition. We've got the Asia Africa Pacific Powerlifting Champs through the IPF and SAPF, which is another powerlifting competition. We've got another Africa Champs through IPF, another competition. All of these events that are happening, because what happens, Dave, you hit a tipping point in the business where you are seen as the standard bearer and the gold standard, please God. And that's when people start to reach out to you and say, can you do this? And if I could just add this, because I have to be cognizant of time. A lot of these events we don't charge for, or we charge a minimal amount. And I've set up the other businesses almost as cash flow engines to support us, because with the niche federations, I know there's no money to pay us. So we cover those costs, because again, this is about building a 5, 10, 15 year relationship with these sports and with these federations.
So I've got one last question for you. Mm. And that is, where do you get that ability or that trust? And when I say that trust in yourself that you can do it. Because a lot of people have ideas and things, and I can do, I should do this, or I could do this, but you've taken it from the should and could, and you've made it happen. Where does that self-belief come from?
A very dear friend of mine gave me the words to answer this question. What's the worst that can happen? Honestly, that's it. What's the worst that can happen? Let me try. Just to give you an example, tomorrow morning we're up at 3 a.m. We're driving to Cape Town. We're broadcasting an event over the weekend and driving back on Sunday. To some, that might sound insane, but it's building a trust relationship with the company and with the federation. What's the worst that can happen? Give it a go. I've not been perfect with all of these things. There are things we've done that have failed. Dave, I started a cosmetics line. You don't hear about Emmett Cosmetics. Stuff fails, but doesn't matter. What's the worst that can happen?
That's amazing.
Just do it, you know?
That would be a great slogan for a company of just do it. Eh? So you've taken...
Well, on this station, just do it.
So you've taken the idea, you've taken the concept, you've changed it, you've made it your own, but you've actually made it work, and you've believed in yourself. And I think for me, one of the greatest lessons of this is, don't only do it for the money, do it in a way that you're giving to others, and then people will give back to you. Nick, have
absolutely,
you got...
Absolutely, that's it.
Have you got one last message for anybody out there who's looking to improve their business in 1 minute?
For sure. Keep your cash flow generation strong, whether that's a salary or how your existing business is going, and test things, and also understand time is on your side. Okay, we've been running Emmett Media for 6 years. We're not profitable yet, but it doesn't matter. It'll come, and it's happening now.
Nick, thank you so much. It's been an inspirational chat. Your business, like your clients, are building muscle. And I look forward to seeing where you're going in the future. This has been Nick Ingle, the founder and CEO of Emmett Gyms. I'm David Zeidel, and this has been the Orchard Business Show.